Blog Talk Radio.
Well, welcome in, as always, everybody, to another edition of the Pro Lacrosse Face-Off, and an actual really special edition this week. I'm James Boger, followed tonight by a really special cast of characters. We're going to be doing the MLL Mock Draft. I have three compatriots in Tom Bovee, Joe Keegan, and the illustrious return of Tim Thomas to the show. And what we've done is we've decided to kind of break up the league into quadrants, and each of us take two teams and kind of run everyone through a real live mock draft of the draft that's going to be coming up this weekend. So far, we have myself covering Charlotte and Ohio. We have Tom Bovee covering he's covering Rochester and Florida. Sorry, this is also already confusing. We have Joe Keegan covering Boston and Denver, and we have Tim Thomas covering New York and Chesapeake. And before we get started, knowing exactly what all these GMs go through week in, week out, we've been going through this now for probably, 24 hours, and already a flurry of trades have happened. And I'm going to go ahead and just start by going ahead and making the official announcement that the number one pick has been traded. The number one pick has been traded. Florida has received McWilliams and Adams and the number five pick, and that's going to be sent to Boston for the number one overall pick. What we're going to do is we're going to allow everyone to have 3 minutes per pick. We're all going to do our analysis in between, and we're all going to go through about three rounds worth of coverage, and that way we can kind of go through the initial stages of the draft without getting in too deep to everything. And this is actually what everybody would do if they were the actual GM. This is not what we think should happen. This is what we would all do if we were all the GMs. So it's going to be really exciting to see exactly kind of all the back and forth and all the trades that are going to happen, exactly who everyone picks, what every other person thinks about every pick. So with that being said, I'm going to go ahead and open up this 2015 draft. Boston is on the clock. They have 3 minutes. So, Joe, if you're ready to make your pick, you've already traded for the number one overall pick. I'm assuming you have a pick in mind. The floor is yours.
I traded with the pick in mind for sure. I'll just touch on the trade a little bit. Basically, this trade to get the number one pick, me as Boston, I gave up Scott McWilliams, who couldn't really crack the Canes lineup last year at his natural position. He got most of his playing time as a short stick defender, and that didn't really work out super well. And now the Canes have brought in Chad Wiedmeyer. They're sort of loaded at the line pole position. So figured we'd shed a little depth, give up Brent Adams. That was tough, but we'll address midfield depth later in the draft. And the pick is going to be, who else? Lyle Thompson out of Albany. I think Boston's definitely the team that can gain the most offensively and from a marketing perspective by adding Lyle. So he'll put some butts in the seats down in Gillette, the new stadium. I'm not sure the Canes will do it, but if they did, I think it's a good move.
So the number one overall pick goes to Boston. It's going to be Lyle Thompson. And real quick, with Tom on the clock, with the second overall pick going to Florida, I'll give him a second to analyze exactly what just happened. Tim, I want to throw it to you. Is this a home run pick for Boston, kind of being the hometown guy?
Lyle's a great player. He's a dynamic player. He fills a need for them at all, attack, for sure. I'm not a fan of what they gave up. I understand McWilliams didn't crack the lineup at the pole, and it is somewhat a position of depth, but it's also a position of old depth for the Boston Canons, with Sweeney and Belisle and Brody all being kind of older defenders. You do bring in Wiedmeyer, but he hasn't exactly shown that he's a top one or two defender yet. I was a fan of the McWilliams pick when they scooped him up. I think you're giving up a lot. I think Adams really had a coming out party last season for the Boston Cannons and showed his versatility. And I don't know that I would have made that move, especially considering they just lost Rabel and Mike Stone, two of the other midfielders that made up that midfield depth in this offseason. So I don't know that I would have been pulling from that pile. With that said, Thompson's a guy that you can build around. Thompson's a guy that can be the face of your franchise. And like I said, you did just trade away Paul Rabel, who was that face. So it's a respectable replacement pick. So I can't fault them for that.
Now, Joe, this whole thing is fictional, as we all know. However, if you are Kevin Barnia of the Boston Cannons, does the Rabel trade really impact you as far as how you would set up this pick? Do you need Lyle Thompson almost more than anyone else does at this point in time after giving away Rabel?
Yeah, I would say that out of all the teams in the league, Boston is definitely the team that Lyle sort of makes the most sense on. I know a lot of people think that maybe Rochester will trade for him, but I know they don't want to trade Jordan Wolf. That's like completely out of the question. It's going to be tough for Rochester to sort of find a spot with Wolf, Miles Thompson, Cockerton on attack. They can't really move him to midfield. They have McIntosh, Lawson, Turry, and John Rannigan. So I would say Boston definitely would make the biggest leap if they acquired Lyle Thompson. And all the other teams would sort of just struggle to get him enough touches and get the guys that they already have enough touches.
Now, real quick, just to kind of go through everybody in the group, because not only are we GMs, we're also playing the role of analyst as well. So, real quick, Tom, starting with you, letter grade for this pick, if Boston were able to secure it, what would you give them?
That's an A. I mean, I think Thompson is the consensus number one overall pick. I don't think he fits in Florida. I think that's the reason why, from my perspective on this trade, why I think Florida needs to move this pick. With his NLL commitments and everything else he's got going on, obviously the proposed NLL commitments, but I think he's going to be the face of a team. He's going to be somebody you want to put on the billboard, and Florida doesn't need that right now. And, I mean, that's attack is the position of strength, and I think you're wasting this pick on anyone else other than Thompson at this point. I think he's the consensus best player in the college game by far. And so with Florida and his travel issues and availability, moving this pick to a team like Boston who just fits in perfectly there. He's everything that they're looking for at this point. And that's a great move for both teams and a great fit for Boston.
Now, I'm going to go ahead and give the pick an A-minus strictly because I agree with Tim about what Boston had to give up to get the pick. However, they do need to face the franchise. Now, with Tom basically backing up against the clock, real quick, Joe, what do you give this pick as far as a letter grade?
For the Cannons, I'd give it an A. I made the pick, so what do you – I mean, come on.
I was hoping you'd give yourself a positive grade, my man. Tim, being a Boston Cannons fan – knowing what they gave up, what exactly would you give this pick?
B+. I think they gave up a little too much.
B+. We'll tell you what. Now we are on the podium, and Florida is picking with the number 2 overall pick. Tom is the GM of Florida. Tom, who do you select with the second overall selection?
We're going to go up to Cornell, and we're going to pick up Connor Bucic. Gives us a dynamic midfielder who can make plays. He's obviously a scoring threat. Midfielders league, we hear it time and time again. He's the best midfielder on the board. Obviously, picking up McWilliams was big. We got a starting defender for us. Adams is an up-and-comer that I think has a ton of potential. He's coming off his best season. We're going to follow that up by bringing in our horse of a midfielder, you know, the guy that we want to be the future of the midfield for this team, and I think he's more than capable of doing that. I think regardless of me being the GM, or I'm assuming Megan Danner is actually Florida's GM, I think this is the pick for them.
So Connor Bucic goes with the second overall pick. Joe, I kind of want to get your feedback on Connor. You had him in your initial May draft going fourth. He's risen up to second. I don't think a whole lot of people are going to argue with this pick. What kind of impact can he make for the Florida launch this next year?
I mean, Busick definitely feels the need for the launch. A lot of people are saying that his stock might be a little too high right now than it should be. But, I mean, given the needs and given the fact that he won't be playing box for years to come, he definitely fills the hole, I mean, the most glaring hole on this launch team besides maybe defense, the offensive midfield. So he's, a step-down shooter with his hands free. He can rip it right hand, overhand. I think it would be a good fit for Florida.
Tim, Florida's entering in their second season. They trade away the first pick for a couple Boston guys that you're pretty close to. Do you think Connor is the type of player that's going to impact them in a major way heading forward, and do you think he is the answer to second overall pick?
I do, actually. I think Tom said it best when he said that he's the guy, the bull that they need at the midfield position. He's a guy that can initiate from up top. He can create his own offense, as well as drawing a slide and helping to create offense for other people. And it's been a huge, well, I shouldn't make it sound like it's been a long time, but for last season, it was a big hole for them for parts of the season where they didn't have somebody up top. They were stacked down low at the attack position and have a very potent attack. Having a weapon from up top that can initiate and can create his own offense is going to be huge for Florida. I think it's a great pick, and I think it's the pick that we'll see the actual Florida team make this weekend as well.
Well, with that being said, I'm going to step up to the podium because I figured out that now I've been trying to shop around the third pick, and I figured out that not a whole lot of you guys wanted to offer me enough to make Charlotte hop off the board at this point in time. So I'm going to go ahead and step up as Wadley Part and go and select Wesley Byrd out of Denver, strictly because they gave up Danowski for this pick. I think that at this point in time, the team has taken a real penchant to not select players that have any indoor value, and I think that now with the amount of players they have on a day-to-day basis, you take the best player they have. I think Berg's that guy. The only thing that I would say about Berg that would give me a little bit of hesitation, that's given me hesitation all day, is the fact that whenever you saw Dino in this offense last year, it kind of stopped with him. Everyone kind of passed the ball around the perimeter, and it stopped with him, and he took a lot of shots. Berg might be that guy, but it's undeniable the talent he possesses. So with the third pick in the MLL draft, the Charlotte Hounds do select Wesley Byrd out of Denver. Tom, I'm going to shoot it right over to you for analysis on the pick.
Yeah, Rochester traded with Boston to pick up number four. Wesley Byrd, perfect fit. Fits every team in the league. You're obviously going to have issues with possible NLL commitments from just about anyone. Most of the guys who I anticipate to go in this first round have some type of NLL commitment. So this is going to be a good fit. This is best player available by far. A lot of years I think he's a steal at this point in the draft, despite this being only number three overall. Berg's kind of a do-it-all attackman. Gives you a finisher, gives you a guy who can play dirty inside, and, steps into a Danowski role as a primary ball carrier and a guy who I think fits next to the pieces that Charlotte already has. Charlotte's one of those teams right now that you look at that roster and they could potentially be very, very good if everything falls in the right direction. And adding Wesley Byrd just makes that even more, even more dangerous. And I think he's a day one starter for just about any team in this league.
Now, Tom did mention the fact there is another trade on the market, and so I'm going to go ahead and figure out exactly what this trade is. It's going to be a little confusing for a second, but basically the number eight pick, Rochester is going to get the eighth pick from Denver for future picks, a 2016 second and a 2017 third, and then Rochester is going to flip that pick to Boston with Miles Thompson and Mark Matthews for number four and Josh Amadon. So basically, Boston's going to get another Thompson brother to go along with that first overall pick and Mark Matthews. And so I think that right now Rochester is going to be picking four, and that is kind of how that trade is going to work. So, Tom, you are back on the board with Rochester at four, but continuing with the Wesley Berg draft pick, Joe, I want to kick it to you. What type of impact can Berg make for the Charlotte Hounds?
Yeah, I mean, if they were to pick him, he is just a pure goal scorer. I mean, the guy, he's just a finisher, and he'd fit well on the team. But I think really, I think the reason why you wanted to trade down James and why the Hounds might potentially want to trade down is because they sort of have quietly assembled the most complete team in the league. I mean, they might not have the best players at every position, but they just have every guy in their role. They have Justin Ward initiating. They got Josh Dion and Mike Sawyer flanking him on either side and finishing. They got at midfield Garrett Thule, Mike Chanichuk, Jake Trepuka, and John Haas. They got, obviously, strength of their team at short stick D Mitty. They got a solid defense now that they brought back Joe Sanoski. And, I do like that they're going with Pierce Bassett this year. He looked good last year. And even Jack Runkle, too, could bid for some time and compete between the pipes. I like this team. I think that the number three pick, they don't really have an obvious need for it. So whatever they may do with it is sort of just giving them depth, which is why they could definitely go with the box player. I don't think they will. They don't seem to like doing that. But if they did, I don't think it would really necessarily hurt them.
Last but not least, Tim, Wesley Berg, number three to Charlotte. What's your thoughts?
You know, these guys have kind of sugarcoated it a little bit and talked about him as a finisher and what have you. And he is that. Yeah, he absolutely is that. But I don't know that I'm a huge fan of the move. And I traded messages with you earlier today when we were talking about it a little bit. I think he does fill the Danowski role to a certain extent, and possibly to the detriment, the same way that Danowski did, in my opinion, in Charlotte, where I think Berg's going to take a lot of shots and not necessarily good ones. And there was one of the problems that you had with Danowski when the ball was running through him all the time. The shot selection was questionable at best, and I think that with this type of player, you could run into the same problem. So I don't know that I'm a huge fan of it.
And with the fourth overall pick, Tom, you are right across the board. With the fourth overall pick, Rochester has to make the pick or forfeit it. So go ahead, Tom. Who's your fourth overall pick?
This one might come as a little bit of a surprise, but I'm going to take Will Hosh, short stick D mid out of Duke. He changes the way that team plays defense. When he's on the field, he is a difference maker. I think it's a huge position of need for Rochester. I like the guys they currently have, and I went back and forth on who to take at this position. But just the things Haas has done in the time he's been there has changed. I mean, it's changed the way that Duke plays defense, and I think he transitions very well to step up and be a great all-around defensive middy in this league, probably the best short stick D mid in the draft by far. There's one other guy that made Jack Neer who's fairly close, but Haas changes the game and is able to work that role of. I mean, we've seen Coach Kyle call it numerous times. It's one-on-one against the short stick all the time, and I think he fits as a guy who can take away some goals in that position.
So with the fourth overall pick, Rochester does select Will Hosh. Will is an interesting character because he was picked out by John Donowski as being the best player on his roster last year, and that's a tremendous testament to exactly how much this player can impact the league. The question is exactly what type of impact can he make on Rochester? I'll throw it to you, Tim. How do you feel about this Will Hosh pick at number four?
Well, I'm a big Duke fan, obviously. And I like Haas. I like a lot. I like a lot of what he does on the field, and I think his game translates to what GMs and teams are looking for from the defensive midfielder in the MLL now. I think he's a guy that can do it all at the D-mid position, and he can transition the ball. He can spark offense. He's shown, and he showed last year that he could score a little bit when he needed to. I think he's a guy that can be a do-it-all midfielder, and not only is he a good defensive midfielder and a good ground ball guy, he's a guy that's not necessarily a liability if he gets stuck on side in an offensive set. So I think that's huge, and I think that's what a lot of teams are looking for. You look at, we talked about Brent Adams and the transition that he was able to make last year and be able to contribute on both sides of the field at times, and I think Haas is a guy that can do that. So I think it's a good pick.
Well, with that being said, Florida actually has their card in, so I'm going to go and let Tom make the pick for Florida launch. And number five, go ahead, Tom.
Jesse King, midfielder, Ohio State.
So with the fifth overall pick, Florida selects Jesse King out of Ohio State. And, Joe, I want to get your analysis about this pick and get your immediate reaction to Florida taking King with the fifth overall pick, maybe a little higher than a lot of other mock drafts that selected King. What do you think about the pick so far?
Yeah, I mean, Tom did deal the top pick, which, I mean, if Florida actually takes on Friday night and takes Lyle Thompson, he's a box guy. And they'd be going home with Lyle Thompson and Connor Bucic, and one of those guys is going to be missing Springs for the rest of his career. So it's not a huge deal that Tom just took Jesse King, who will also be playing box lacrosse in the Springs, sort of the same thing that Florida will most likely do on Friday night. I do think that, I don't know, I mean, it's not that I'm not a Jesse King fan. I just like Chad Tutton out of UNC a little better. I like him more than Jesse King, but just personal opinion. So I like the pick.
So far this pick has been a little bit maligned. Tom, do you want to go and defend exactly why Jesse King was the selection for the overall pick?
Yeah, I think King fits very well in Florida. Tutton is more of the finisher role. I think they have that already, and when King gives them a big-bodied guy who's got some World Games experience, he's blossoming. I think I don't love his game at Ohio State personally. I think he struggled on that level, but I think at the next level his game projects significantly higher. I think that big-bodied midfielder, he's got kind of a Max Seabold style potential in him and beyond. I want to see what he's able to do senior year, but obviously with the draft being beforehand, he's a guy that at this point I think he fills the biggest need for Florida. If the draft plays out the way we see it so far, picking up McWilliams prevents Florida from taking a defender here, which I thought was a big need for them. But grabbing the two best midfielders available in this draft, there's nothing better for Florida at this point than that.
Tim, last but not least, I want to get to you about Jesse King. As Joe said, it seems to be a little high for him. Tom justified the pick. What do you make of King going fifth overall in this draft?
It's a toss-up. It's how you rate the midfielders, whether you like the kid Tucker from Virginia or how you kind of rank them. I think King's a quality player. I think Tom's right. He's got a lot of upside. He's an athletic kid he's got speed, he's got strength. He can evolve into an MLL dynamic player. And obviously, again, like people have said, he's going to have some indoor commitments, and that can either sometimes that can benefit your game. You look at a guy like Logan Shuss who kind of did the similar thing coming out of Ohio as well. So I don't dislike the pick. I think it was really kind of a toss-up between him and Tucker, and it all depends on what you were looking for at the position. But I agree with what Tom said. You're addressing a need. You went out and you got the top midfielder. I think consensus, the top midfielder in the league if you're Florida, and now you're building around him and you're giving somebody to work on the wing.
Well, with that being said, the sixth pick is in. I'm going to switch it back to Tom. Tom has pretty much got control of the first round of this draft. So the sixth pick, go ahead.
Randy Stotts, a tackman out of Syracuse, goes to Rochester at number six.
So Randy Stotts going to Rochester out of Syracuse. Tom's taking a Syracuse guy, which is good for Rochester. It's good for Tom. I feel like it's good across the board. I like the pick. Joe, I'm going to kick it over to you. What's your feeling about Randy Stotts?
Yeah, as a player, I love Stotts. He can light it up. He can pass. He can shoot. He's as complete a player as you can find in this draft offensively. I just don't know if Rochester can really handle taking on another guy who has NLL commitments. If you look at their roster right now, they get Miles Thompson, Mark Cockerton, Jordan McIntosh, Joel White, Mike Manley, all out due to commitments. I mean, even Mark Matthews, too. They just don't really have a lot of guys who are going to be there in the spring. So it's tough in this draft. I mean, the best players in this draft do play box lacrosse, but I probably would have went with a guy who's going to be able to play. He's going to be able to commit to you in the spring, like a guy like John Glessner out of Army.
With that being said, we do have another card in, number seven overall for Rochester, again from Tom. Go ahead, Tom. Jordan Stevens, defenseman out of Cornell. Tim, this is kind of an interesting pick because most people had a couple other guys ahead of Stevens as far as defensive players. What do you make of Stevens going seventh?
I think it's a good pick. He's an absolute ground ball vacuum, probably the best ground ball guy in the draft. And he's got versatility as well. I think he's a guy that can do a little bit of everything on the defensive side of the ball. He can play some close. He can play some LSM. He can gobble up those ground balls, which is something that we're always talking about and a team is always looking for, you know, similar to what we've seen guys like Brian Karalunas do in the past. I think he can be that style of player in the MLL, and every team needs a guy like that. It's a matter of how you rank them. Again, I think he was either the 1 or the 1A on my board in terms of defensemen, so you can't hate on that pick.
Well, with that being said, Boston, who has traded with a bunch of people with the number 8 overall pick, Denver originally had it, it fell to Rochester, and now it's Boston. So, Joe, I'm going to go and throw it to you because the card is in for Boston at number 8. Joe, who does Boston pick?
Right. So, first, how Boston got the pick. They got the pick from Rochester, who got it from Denver. I'm operating as Denver, and personally, I felt like at this point, Denver has such a complete team that I'd rather trade for future picks. I got a second round pick next year and a third round pick the year after that. I just feel that Denver can't really take on any more box guys. That's what this draft is. I mean, the first round is loaded with. I feel like they just got value moving backwards, taking picks for future years. And Boston has needs that they can address right now. They actually have holes on this roster. So Boston's going to go ahead and select Jack Neer, short stick midi out of Notre Dame. Kid's just an all-around athlete. I mean, I think he played either attacker or offensive midfield in high school. They converted him when he got to Notre Dame. And he's a great on-ball defender, starts transition. I'll let you guys talk about him.
So with the 8th overall pick, the Canes select Jack Neer out of Notre Dame. That means Chesapeake, for the first time, is going to be on the clock. And Tom, I want to go ahead and get your initial aspect about Jack. You mentioned him earlier about being a possible pickup for a couple of your teams. What's your feeling about him going as far as 8 to Boston?
It's a need for Boston. Boston, Tim mentioned earlier, that it's a position they're getting older at. Matt Smalley is still a stud, but, you know, there's a gap there. There's an age gap there. They needed someone to fill that role. Picking him up, a great guy out of Notre Dame, an absolute speedster. I mean, he is lightning fast, and I mean, he would break a treadmill. There's no doubt that he would outrun a treadmill. He is just uber talented player that fits very, very well into Boston. That's a good pick for them. That's somebody they should definitely be targeting if they're able to get into that range again to get a pick like that. I think picking him at four is too soon unless they hang out and pick up Haas. So getting him here is a big pick for them and a guy that I think can play for them and probably play for a number of years.
Well, with that being said, the ninth overall pick is in. This draft is starting to move very quickly. So with the ninth pick, the Chesapeake Bayhawks select, and Tim, I'm going to throw it to you.
So picking for the Bayhawks, I've talked about old defenses quite a bit already tonight, and that's certainly an issue with Chesapeake. They've got some age on defense. They've had some injury issues. So with this pick, we'd select Goran Murray out of Maryland. I think he's the best available. I was going back and forth between Jordan Stevens and Murray here. But I'm going to go with Murray because he's a Maryland guy. He's a Terrapin. He's local. He will register with the fans there, and he will fill a need for the Chesapeake Bayhawks. He's tested against some of the best attackmen in college lacrosse routinely and has really had a very good career for the Terrapins out there.
So Goran Murray going number nine to Chesapeake, and then, Tim, I believe it's going back to you with New York on 10, so you're actually back on the clock, but I want to throw it over to Joe. Joe, you had Goran Murray going eight in your May draft on Laxert.com. What do you think about him going 10, and what do you think about his fit going into his relative home of Chesapeake?
Yeah, I mean, that's not a huge drop from where I thought that he was going to go. If you ask me again to redo that right now, I think I would say that he'd go probably around here, early second round. I think this draft is just loaded with offensive talent. You got to get these studs while you can. And Chesapeake is, I mean, probably one of two teams that really needs defensive help because, Tim already hypothetically traded away Brian Spolina, so that doesn't help them at the pole position. But Spolina and Polanco are getting a little older, and they definitely need to bring in some youth. So I like the pick for sure.
Well, Tom, I kind of want to throw it back over to you. Goran Murray going to Chesapeake, it seems like it's a perfect fit as far as location is concerned. What do you make of him going nine in this draft?
I don't like this pick. I think it's a very big possibility in this draft. I think Cottle will target a Maryland defender. I'm not a Goran Murray guy. I hate to say it. I think he plays in a Maryland system that takes advantage of his skills and puts him in a position to play. I think he's the type of defender that needs to have a structured system week in and week out, constantly be on the practice field, constantly be around the same group of guys that he's with. I think he's going to have some issues transitioning to the pros. I think in the college ranks with a college system, he does fine. And if MLL was similar to other pro leagues where they practiced every day and did all that stuff, I think he'd be great. But I have questions about his ability to transition as a defender into the Major League Lacrosse. Maryland defenders, while there's been some hits, I mean, there's been some tremendous Maryland defenders in this league. Maryland isn't known for producing defenders in the MLL, and I just don't see him being a great fit here. I had him, you know, on my Mel Kiper big board at 26.
Well, I mean, at some point in time, I think the Maryland defender situation is a big issue. I've seen Michael Earhart for Charlotte, and I think he's a tremendous force for that team. I think he could be good, but I agree with Tom on this one. I think Goran Murray could go possibly later in this draft, whenever the actual thing comes down to it. With that being said, the Cards number 10, New York Lizards, with their first pick in this draft is in. I'll send it to Tim.
What do you give the team that already has everything? This was a hard one for me because this team is so deep and so stacked. So I was trying to look at where I was going to put this pick and who I was going to go after. And for me, I decided I was going to go for depth and – scoop up Matt Pulian from Lehigh. I think he's the best goalie available at the time. I think a backup for Adams is something that's needed on this team. I don't think they have the answer necessarily or the heir apparent. And I really like what Pulian does. I think he's a John Galloway-esque goalie in terms of how he can spark transition with the way he can chuck the ball with his no-fear style, kind of diving across and being willing to challenge attackers. I'm a big fan of Matt Pulian, so selecting a goalie here.
So with the embarrassment of riches the Lizards have seemingly established, Matt Pulian, the first goalie on our list, goes at number 10. Tom, I kind of want to throw this one to you. What do you make of the first goalie coming off at 10 to New York as a backup to Drew Adams?
By far the best goalie in the draft. I love his game, his quickness, his intangibles. I think Tim made a lot of really good analogies as far as other players that he would remind you of. I think he's a team leader. I think he's a great backstop. 10 is too early for a goalie. Sorry to say, I just think that's early. I think the Lizards have needs in other areas. I would look for a defenseman here. And, you know, face-off guys and goalies, it's a 50-50 shot. You never know if they're going to make it. You never know if they're going to last. Look at some of the goalies in the league and where they played in college. It doesn't. You don't necessarily have to have the best college career in order to make it in the MLL as a goalie. So it's an interesting pick. I think it's a good pick. I do think it's a position of need for New York. I just think it's too early.
Well, that being said, before we kick it over to Joe to analyze this goalie selection, I do want to announce a trade. New York has traded the 11th pick in the draft to Chesapeake for Brian Spillane and the 26th pick in the draft. So this pick is going to be Chesapeake's. With that being said, Joe, I do want to kick it back over to you. This is the first goalie selected in this draft. Tom says it's too early. At what point in time do you think a goalie is too early, and do you think Pulian is going to be the type player to warrant the 10th overall pick?
Depends who's on the clock. I don't know if 10 is necessarily too early for a goalie. Like Tom said, it is very tough to project how the goalie is going to be at the next level. I mean, the game doesn't really translate too easily. It's like picking a quarterback in the NFL draft. You just don't know how they're going to project. I think every team that I'm looking at right now, all eight teams, have one or two very good goalies. If you have Drew Adams, I mean, maybe you're concerned about injuries, but I don't think you have to go and get a goalie right here. I think the Lizards could benefit from probably another long pole after trading away Brian Karolunas and maybe just some athleticism, some defensive midfield help, and just overall midfield play to get them through those early months. But, I see New York doing something like Tim did with the 11th pick, trading back, because when Spillane doesn't have a guy that he likes, he trades back, he gets future picks, and then he uses those future picks when there is a guy who he does like a couple years later, and he trades up and he goes and gets him.
Well, tell you what, based off that fictional mock draft pick, Tim Thomas is back on the board with Chesapeake for his 11th pick in the first round of this mock draft. And so, Tim, you are on the board with the 11th pick for Chesapeake after the trade. So the board's on you.
For the Bayhawks, one of the biggest issues last year was their attempt to do face-off by committee. I know Tom's going to love this because he just said that it was too early for a goalie or a face-off guy. But that's where I'm going with this, because I think – they showed, if Chesapeake showed us anything last year, they showed us that you need a guy. You need somebody that you can rely on to go out there and take draws, you know, time after time after time. And they didn't have that last year, and they absolutely got hammered on the X, got hammered for time of possession. So, with that said, we're going back to Maryland, and we're taking Charlie Raffa. He was dominant, 68% last season, a fantastic face-off guy, and a guy I think that's going to transition well to the MLL.
So, with the 11th overall pick, Chesapeake from New York in our mock draft selects Charlie Raffa, the first faceoff guy off the board. And I want to kick it back to Tom. I know I'm kind of leaving Joe out in the dust a little bit here, but Tom is the big proponent of the faceoff guy. He made fun of the Brandon Fowler pick last year. So, Tom, is this too early to take a guy like Charlie, especially for a team like Chesapeake, who's had trouble with the faceoff for a couple of years now?
Yeah, because as Joe said, you know, taking a faceoff guy is even tougher than taking a quarterback. You never know how they're going to transition, and it takes a few years. I would never taken Fowler as high as they did, and it turns out he hasn't exactly been lighting it up lately. He's not. I mean, he still doesn't even have a secure starting job. It takes 2 to 3 seasons in most cases. There are exceptions, but in most cases, to become a dominant faceoff guy in the MLL. And, yes, I think there's going to be a changing of the guard here shortly. I think Garendlian and Kelly and Snyder are going to be calling it a career. But at the same time, you know, you're using the number 11 overall pick for a guy who probably won't be your go-to guy for maybe 2 or 3 seasons. I think that's too high risk of a pick when I think you could have him in the mid-20s. On the flip side, Raffa is an exceptional talent, obviously an injury history, pretty tough go at the end of last year, but he is incredibly talented, and he is a guy who will literally play on a half a leg or no leg or one hand or whatever you need him, because he's a battler.
Well, with that being said, Boston has actually got the 12th pick. They've been on the clock. So they're going to make their pick directly afterwards. Florida is going to be on the clock, because I realize we haven't been announcing exactly who's going to be on the clock afterward. So this pick's going to be Boston. Next up is Florida. And with the Boston Cannons on the clock, I'm going to kick it over to Joe. Joe, go ahead.
Yeah, so first I'd just like to say I'm really regretting trading the number 14 pick to Charlotte for Ryan Young, because there are two guys on the board right now that I love.
And because you got Ryan Young.
Well, we'll see how that plays out. I mean, I'm not going to write it off as a bad deal, but I definitely think if Friday's draft shakes out like this, which, I mean, it won't, we won't be right. But if it does, there are two guys right here with these next three picks that I would love to get. I'd love to pick John Glessner out of Army, but I can't, because my head coach has a son who plays for Virginia. His name is Ryan Tucker. Midfielder. A lot of people have him going in the first round. I'm not so sure that would be the case if his father wasn't a coach in this league. I think he's a great player. It's sort of similar to Rob Emery, who the Cannons drafted last year. I like the pick here at number 12. At number 5 for your fourth midfielder after Buchanan and Rob Emery and Max Seabob. I'm not really sure that that's a great pick at number 5, but 12, I'm okay with it. I'm taking Ryan Tucker.
So Ryan Tucker, a coach's son, playing for his dad in Boston. A lot of people have this pick selected real close to the top of the draft, especially Gwynn Kesnich said he was going to go, I think, 5 or 6 in this draft. And so this is going to be kind of interesting, considering who his dad is and whether or not he falls. People are going to be a little adverse to picking him based off everything is concerned. Tim, I kind of want to throw this pick to you just to see what you think about Ryan Tucker going 12 to Boston instead of going 4, 5, 6 to Boston.
I think basically what Joe said is right on. I think it's kind of a predetermined pick. I think that he is probably going to go to Boston, and I think that everybody feels that way. And I agree with Joe. I think he'll be on the board around now. And if you can wait and get him a little later on and maybe get some higher value with your higher picks, because I think the comparison to Emery was a good one. And I don't think that everybody knows my opinions on Emery. I talked about it all last season. I don't think that he's the guy when it comes to building your midfield. I don't think Tucker's the guy either. I think he fills a good complementary role. I think he will be a good complementary midfielder a la a Mike Stone, like Mike Stone was for Boston for a number of years. So I think it's a good pick.
Well, with that being said, the 13th pick in the draft is the Florida launch, and I believe Tom is ready with this pick. So, Tom, throwing it to you.
Michael Pellegrino, defenseman, Hopkins.
No analysis. So let's go ahead and go right back over to Joe. Joe, Mike Pellegrino going 13 to the Florida launch. What do you make of this pick? And do you think Tom was right in just baiting the pick and not saying another word?
Well, I mean, I can't tell if Tom loves the pick or hates it, because usually when he does something that he's proud of, he likes to brag a little bit about it. But personally, I like the pick. I think it's definitely a need for Florida. They traded away Joe Sanofsky, like I mentioned earlier. They got, obviously, all-world defender Tucker Durkin. They got P.T. Ricci. Last year they spent, I believe it was their first round, I think, eighth overall pick on Joe Murrer out of Ohio State. They got a few guys who can play deep, but they definitely need some depth at pole. So Pellegrino, probably the best guy available. And, yeah, I like it.
I'm going to throw it over to Tim, because obviously Tom has no words for this pick. Tim, Pellegrino going at this point, time to watch. What impact do you think he's going to be able to make?
I think he's a solid defender. I think he may be a little bit of a system guy. I'm not sure that he was the best available defender on the board at this point. But, again, it's a judgment call. It's what are you looking for at that position. I think there may have been a couple other guys that I probably would have taken over him, though.
Well, with that all being said, the Charlotte Hounds' next pick is actually in. I'm going to go ahead and go out on a little bit of a limb. Charlotte doesn't normally select a whole lot of indoor guys, and so I'm going to go ahead and select Chad Tutton right now. I've fallen in love with the things he's able to do with the ball. I think he has the dodge ability that Charlotte lacks in the midfield at some point in time. So I'm going to take Chad Tutton with the 14th overall pick for Charlotte. And the 15th pick is forfeited, so the clock is on Denver. But, Tom, I'll throw it to you after not saying a word after your last pick. What do you think about Chad Tutton going with the 14th pick in the draft?
You know, that was probably the guy that I was looking at for Florida. But having grabbed two midfielders earlier with Connor Bucic at number two, the trade with Florida or with Boston netting me Jesse King at number five. Tutton was a place I was looking, so I'm not at all shocked to see him go there. It's a great pick for them, but you know, he fits their system. But you know, the chance to grab Pellegrino at 13 was you know, something I had to do. I think he fits, and now I've got two stud midfielders and a top flight defender that filled another position of need for me. So yeah, absolutely. I like the pick. Tutton, a local guy, staying home and probably being available to play as soon as UNC's season ends, far earlier than everybody thinks it will, because that's what they always do.
Well, I think it goes without words that Pellegrino was your pick. But I think that as of right now, with the Tutton pick, Tim, before Denver brings in their first pick of this draft, what have you summarize as far as the Pellegrino pick and then Tutton back-to-back with Rochester forfeiting their pick? How big do you think Tutton could be possibly be for Charlotte?
Well, I think first and foremost, it's a cheap travel, which is, we know, huge for the Charlotte Hounds. Whatever can keep that overhead low is good for them. I think it's a good move. I think it's a solid move. It's another guy that can come in and contribute right away. But like Joe said, you know, this is a well-rounded team down there in Charlotte that, you know, can put together kind of a complete unit. Sorry, I just got a text message from my wife, a little bit distracted. But I think he fits in, and he doesn't have to be a stud right away on this Charlotte Hounds team. And then you can kind of take a chance on a guy that maybe is going to play indoor or a guy that isn't going to be there right away because you have other guys to fill that void until he gets there?
Well, tell you what, with that being said, instead of taking it over to Joe, who's obviously going to make this pick obsolete, we're going to switch it over to number 15 overall after Rochester forfeits their pick from their LSM supplemental draft picks, if I said that right. Denver has the pick, so I'm going to kick it over to Joe. Joe, who does Denver pick with the 15th overall pick?
Yeah, with the 15th overall pick, Denver is going to take another lefty midfielder, but this one doesn't have box commitments, or he won't have box commitments in the future. It's Eric Adamson. He plays at Denver now, so he's a native of Cali, so I don't know where he'll be flying out of after college, but you can assume that it's going to be close, it's going to be cheap, and they finally have a consistent lefty midfield presence next to Sivak and Snyder. I know they've had Zach Greer and Cam Holding sort of come in for those June, July, August months after the NLL season, but it's definitely nice for them to get a traditional field player, lefty midfielder. I think they'll probably take him if they do end up keeping the number 8 pick, but I was able to trade back and still get him, so I like that.
So Denver was able to trade back, still get a Denver alum in Adamson. Tim, what do you make of this pick, and do you think Adamson was taken at a value pick, or do you think this is actually where he's going to go in our mock draft?
It's probably in the neighborhood of where he's going to go, and you know, it's like you said, it's another face out there in Denver, guys that they know. We've seen them taking guys from Denver University time and time again. You know, he's a California guy originally, so who knows what he's going to do once he's done from college. Is he going to be one of those, you know, guys that ends up traveling out to the West Coast? And we've seen that hurt guys' draft stock in this draft because of having to bring them out. You know, if you're not Peter Baum or you're not Kyle Harrison, a lot of teams don't want to deal with having to fly you out there. So we'll have to see how that all pans out or whether or not he's going to travel back and forth. But, you know, Denver is the furthest out west franchise as it is right now, and we saw them be willing to move Matt Gibson back and forth from the West Coast when he was out there, so maybe this could work.
Well, before we do any more analysis, being the Charlotte GM, I've already ran up to the podium. I have written the name on the card, and I've done everything I can to make sure no one else gets my way, because Charlotte selects Kevin Rice, a tackman from Syracuse. At 16, I don't know how he's lasted this long, being the prolific scorer he is. We're going to take value on this one. Don't really know where he could fit in, except for everywhere on the attack, considering how Charlotte looked last year. But so Charlotte takes Kevin Rice, number 16. Ford is on the clock, number 17, and I'm going to throw it to Tom because he's a Syracuse guy, and someone going to Charlotte from Syracuse makes me so happy. So, Tom, go ahead and analyze the picks.
I took Randy Stotts at number 6 with Rochester, and then it was head-to-head as to who fit in better. I like Stotts' upside, although he has some serious other question marks. And Rice is I mean, it's 1A to 1B in that situation. Getting Rice at 16 is huge. He will fit in great with Charlotte at this spot. Interesting to see how he's able to be as not being the attacker from X, with Ward obviously holding that position for that team. But a great pick, a huge value pick, and a guy who I believe, having watched every single game he's played in his college career, can fit at just about any team in this league as either a number 2 or number 3 attackman early on, with more than enough ability to become a number 1.
Yeah, I think Rice at this point in time is a value pick. I think that at some point in time we're going to forget about a couple guys. This is a mock draft after all. So, Joe, what's your analysis on Rice? Is this really where he's going to land, around 16, or do you foresee him being along the lines of a late first-round pick?
Yeah, I don't think he's really going to fall this far. I mean, I also don't think that Boston is going to trade up for Lyle Thompson and Miles Thompson. So, they're going to have those 4 and 5 picks, and I think he's going to go somewhere there. He fits really well in Boston as a right-handed attackman, complements Will Manny pretty well. Both of them can initiate. And by the way, it's not that being short is a bad thing, but would Kevin Rice, Will Manny, and Ryan Young be the shortest, or I mean the lightest attack unit in league history?
Probably.
I think it would. I'm gonna have to Google the heights and weights, but I mean that's not a bad thing because I like. I mean, you watch Will Manny play and he brings it with that chip on his shoulder. I mean the guys like that, the quick guys, they know that they're a little smaller and they know that people are doubting them, so it makes them work that much harder and play that much better. So I think he fits in somewhere in the middle of the first round to Boston, but definitely not as far as 16. He'll go mid-first to early second at the lowest.
Tim, I'm going to throw it back over to you. The past couple picks have been Eric Adamson, Chad Tutton, and Kevin Rice. These guys have been projected going in late first-round picks. Do you think that this is just value picks, or do you think that some NLL commitments could possibly push some of these guys down or push some other guys up? Because Tutton has NLL restrictions. So does Berg. Do you think the NLL restrictions on a bunch of players is going to be a huge impact on this league as far as this draft is concerned?
I think it will. I think it's a, you know, we've talked about it. Everybody's talked about it. It's a indoor laden draft. And I think it, to not think that's going to have an effect on it is kind of naive. I do think that Rice at this point would be a ridiculous value pick. I'm kind of with Tom and Joe in the fact that I think he'll go earlier than this. But as far as Charlotte taking him, it would be a glorious pick for them. They have had a problem with attackers disappearing, you know, a la Eric Lesby, who's no longer with the team, Mike Sawyer, who was on a milk carton for half the season last year. They've had an issue with guys disappearing and kind of blending into the background at the attack position. And, you know, Rice is a guy that's not going to do that.
I agree. I don't. If Rice is here, it's one of those things, like, I don't know if I could put track cleats on Wade fast enough to have him sprint up to the board. I think Kevin Rice is obviously the pick at 16. I think it's just kind of one of those things, the way we have done our mock drafts, that people have picked for need and people have picked exactly how we think they're going to go. That's not to say how it's going to happen, but either way, the pick for Florida, number 17, is coming in. Tom, flipping over to you.
Attackman Joey Sankey out of UNC.
You do not explain anything. It's unbelievable.
Boom. Microphone drop.
Let's go ahead and kick that one right over to Joey. Joe, analyze this pick before I kill Tom.
Yeah, another mic drop pick from Tom. I'm not sure that I'd be as confident about this one as the Mike Pellegrino pick. Florida doesn't really have a need for an attackman. Obviously, they have Casey Powell. That guy's kind of good. And Kevin Cunningham, Kieran McArdle. I'm hopeful that Curtis Dixon will play, but I doubt it. I saw him joke on Twitter somewhere about how he had a 5-game MLL career. So things aren't looking good for that. But I think they need what they got in Juszczyk, and I know that's not here at number 17, but they need – oh, actually, it was here at number 17. They could have taken John Glessner out of Army. He can play a tackle or midfield. He's a big body, and he's got a little more shooting range than Joey Sankey. So I feel like spacing-wise, Sankey doesn't really fit in on this roster. So, yeah, I'm not sure what all the confidence coming out of Tom's side is for.
Tim, I'm going to throw it right back over to you. Joey Sankey, going to Florida at 17, What do you make of the pick from the senior from UNC, and do you think he's going to make a huge impact for Florida?
No, I don't. I think he's Billy Bitter, and he's I'm not overly confident at his ability to last in the MLL. He's incredibly dynamic. He's fast. He's the type of attacker that will run right at you, and in the MLL that can get you killed unless you're Garrett Thule. I think he's going to have a hard time transitioning to the MLL because of that fearless nature, and because he's the type of attacker that will run and dive through somebody as opposed to trying to make them miss. And I think we've seen that cause problems for players trying to make the leap to the pros.
Well, with the next pick, Florida picks once again at number 18. And so I'm going to throw it back over to Tom for his, basically his next selection at Florida for 18. Tom, go ahead.
With the 18th pick in the draft, Florida takes defenseman Carson Cannon out of Denver. You guys want a little analysis? I watched this kid play since he was about a seventh grader. He is ridiculously good. He is athletic. I think he stands up very well. I like going to Florida here with him because, A, he does not have to be a number one defender in this system. He fits in well next to Tucker Durkin. He's going to be a tremendously talented player. Obviously, I think he fits better in Denver because I'm not sure where he will end up. He's from Minnesota, going to school in Denver, but this kid is tremendous. He was the best player on the field when he was a seventh grader playing against, you know, young high school age kids, and I think that's continued throughout his career. Just a tremendously talented defenseman out of Denver.
So Carson Cannon going number 18. Joe, I want to get your analysis on this pick because this is the second straight pick going to Florida. How much of an impact do you think Cannon's going to be able to make for the Florida launch?
For the Florida launch, I think it would be a huge pick. Like I said earlier, I mean, Pellegrino was a nice pick. He can run a little long stick midi, but they definitely do need defensive depth. I mean, I feel like Tom's pick for them, like, six times already. How many picks did he actually have? 13.
Enough.
So, I mean, he's brought in some defensive talent, and I mean, it's a much better fit than the Sankey trade, the Sankey pick. I think offensive midfield and long pole are definitely the two needs for Florida. So if they can address those on Friday night, they'll be looking pretty good for this season.
So with that being said, Charlotte has the 19th pick as far as our draft is concerned. And I'm going to go ahead and nab the player that we all thought that Charlotte might grab as a third pick. I'm going to grab Nico Ponchrello. Like, I'm so bad at saying these names. But either way, out of Loyola, I feel like that he's one of these guys that is familiar with a lot of the players on the team. No offense to anything that Charlotte's been able to do right now, but they love local players. They love guys from Loyola, Duke, and the surrounding regions. And so I don't feel like it could be a possible mock draft without selecting Ponchrello at this point in time. So with the 19th pick, Charlotte selects Nico Ponchrello out of Loyola. And I'm going to go and throw it back to Tom just to see what he thinks about the Loyola pick.
Yeah, that's a great pick. He should go earlier than that. The guy's got the guy's got just a cannon of a shot, and I think he plays well with the other guys Charlotte has in this system. Absolute value pick here. He's an interesting case because I think he's come on later in his career. I think he's gotten better every year. Clearly. You know, I could say this about every guy, and it's almost beating a dead horse at this point with MLL drafts, that his value would be higher at the end of the season than it is earlier. But, you know, he fits into this team. My problem maybe with this pick, if I'm going to nitpick at all, is he's not all that different from Sawyer. And Sawyer clearly has had incredibly mixed results as a pro.
So who I'm going to throw it to right now is Tim, I kind of want to get your selection about the past couple picks. We had Sankey picked by Florida, then Cannon picked by Florida, and then Pontrello picked by Charlotte. Which one of these do you think is the most likely pick to kind of fall in this area? Like, who do you not think? All of our picks have been a little bit of a reach because we've all kind of picked players for our own teams. We've all made trades for our own teams. Which one of these players do you think is actually going to fall this far and could actually make an impact on the team?
Probably Cannon. I think I agree with what Tom said. I think he was the best defender on his team, but he's also kind of what you look for in an MLL defender. He's a physical guy. He's a guy that isn't going to back down and isn't necessarily he might not be the most finesse defender out there, but he's a guy that you're going to remember was covering you. He's a guy that is going to get physical, is going to put the body on you, is going to lay the lumber, and I think that's going to translate well to the MLL, where defenders are able to beat on attackers a little more than they are in the NCAAs. So I think the Cannon pick is probably my favorite out of that group, especially if you put him alongside a guy like Tucker Durkin. I think that would be huge for him and huge for the franchise.
Now, I think we have a trade with Boston. I'll let Joe go ahead and illustrate the fact that New York and Boston have traded with each other, because I am unsure as far as the exact parameters they've gone through. So, Joe, go ahead.
As Boston, I'm going to trade a future third-round pick in 2016 to New York to light up to this number 20 spot right here and take a guy who I really can't believe didn't go earlier, John Glessner out of Army. I was talking about him earlier when I wanted to pick him when I took Ryan Tucker for Boston. The guy can play attack and midfield. He started his career at Army as a midfielder, and he's just been a stud at Army ever since he got there. He's a big, big body. He can shoot. He can dodge. He fills an obvious need for the Cannons, and I'm liking the offense that they have sort of put together with Lyle, Miles, Ryan Tucker, and now John Glessner.
A little bit of a trade at the 20th pick. New York trades their pick to Boston for John Glessner out of Army. With Rochester on the clock, Tim, I kind of want to throw it back to you about exactly where Glessner might fit with the Boston Cannons.
Well, I think what Joe said is right. I think he would be a benefit. I think he's huge on whatever team selects him. I am just hesitant to take a guy from Army. You know, we've seen it with Jeremy Baltus. We've seen it with Gareth Stuhl. We've seen it with a number of armed forces guys where, you know, you never know when they're going to get stationed. You never know when they're going to get transferred. You never know, you know, they've got a much more important job than Major League Lacrosse, and that's a risk you've got to take when you're drafting one of these guys. With that said, if you're doing it, you know, late in the third round, I think it's a good value pick and a solid pick, and he can absolutely be a contributor on an MLL team for sure.
Well, with the next overall pick, without dissecting that trade too much, Rochester is up. With that pick, I'm going to throw it over to Tom. Tom, who do you select with the 21st overall pick?
Ryan Walsh, attackman out of Colgate. He was a tremendous player early on when he played alongside Peter Baum. Big attackman. He gives me some insurance in case of a Stotts injury and or, you know, NLL commitments for him. Kid's going to be a tremendous talent in the league. He is an absolute finisher with an incredible shot. Value pick this late in the draft should potentially go higher, but absolutely a fit in Rochester. Despite having probably too many attackmen on the roster, I think he's tough to pass up.
At some point in time, I think a lot of our picks are going to be a little bit earlier or a little bit later than a lot of people would project them to be as far as mock drafts. So Ryan Walsh falling to number 20 for New York is going to be kind of interesting. Tim, I kind of want to get your thoughts about Ryan Walsh, and then I want to get also your predictions about exactly what New York's going to be able to do with these draft picks, because a lot of their team is laden with veteran players. So do you think that any of these draft picks that New York makes this year are going to be for now, or do you think they're just playing for the future with these draft picks?
Well, I think they'll try to fill some slots and try to get a couple diamonds in the rough if possible, maybe trade a few pieces. But they're stacked at this point. I honestly, you know, maybe they can use another LSM with the trades that they've made, but they're a very deep roster, so it's hard to kind of determine what they're going to do. As far as the Ryan Walsh thing, I agree with Tom. I think he's got a ton of upside. I think he'll be a good complement. The guy's a mountain. You know, he's a giant guy that can just barrel through people. I keep talking about Garrett Thule, and he's got some similar tendencies to a Garrett Thule. And I talked earlier about not being afraid of the MLL defenders. Well, Walsh is a guy that doesn't need to be, because he's as big as some of them and can match size for size with them. So I think it would be a good pick at this point.
Well, that being said, the last pick in our 2015 MLL mock draft goes to the Denver Outlaws. And, Joe, I'm going to let you take the lead on this, and then we'll get into a little bit about the real draft that comes up this weekend. Who does Denver take in your mock draft at 22?
Denver's going to take a guy who hasn't really gotten much attention in the mock drafts I've seen, although most of them besides, I guess, Quinn Kesnick-Nall haven't really gone past the first eight picks. It's going to be Ryan Izzo, a D-midi out of UMass. You hear a lot of the talk going to Will Haas and Jack Neer, and rightfully so. The guys are definitely going to be studs in MLL. But Ryan Izzo was an honorable mention All-American last year. Plays for UMass. He redshirted in 2011 when he tore his ACL, but since then he's just been an absolute animal for UMass. I mean, he's like always among the team leaders in ground balls and cost turnovers, playing short stick midi on the wings on faceoffs, and just a really athletic kid. I mean, stud football player here in Massachusetts. I think in the real draft, he'll probably go to Boston and fill the role that Mike Stone used to play, being the hometown kid at Harvard, because Izzo's actually from Walpole, Mass., the town over from Foxborough. So he should bring out a good crowd to Gillette Stadium this summer. And I think wherever he goes, he's going to be able to bring just sort of that like grit and sandpaper sort of glue guy mentality that you hear people talk about always going under the radar.
And that concludes our three-round MLL mock draft. However, the coverage is not over with, because I actually want to get what each one of these guys think is actually going to happen, because a lot of the trades that we made and a lot of the picks that we made were because of fandom or because of players available, because other people picked people because of fandom. Like, it was It shows exactly how complex a GM's life could possibly be as far as the NLL draft is concerned. So what I want to ask everybody is exactly who can possibly make the most out of this draft. And, Tim, first I want to go to you, because you're from Boston, and Boston has a lot of picks and a lot of ammunition, and they also have the most initiative to possibly try to replace Paul Rabil. Who do you think is going to be a big player in this draft? Exactly how do you think this whole thing is going to play out?
Well, I think Boston and Florida are going to be the biggest players. I think they both have the most work to do, in my opinion. I think that, you know, they have the luxury of picking early in this draft. Both teams do have multiple picks early in the draft, but they also both need them. They both have some significant holes to fill at this point, and it's going to be interesting to see kind of how they play it. If I was Florida, I would be looking to trade that first-round pick. I wouldn't be looking to draft Lyle Thompson because I don't think he's going to go down there and play. We saw Jeremy Thompson didn't want to go down to Florida and play. Jammer didn't want to go down to Florida and play. There was a number of guys that didn't want to make that trip. And I could see with the indoor commitments, with being an upstate New York guy, I could see Lyle having issues making that trip, especially when his brother's playing in upstate New York. So it's going to be interesting to see kind of how they work that out, whether Florida is able to move back from that number one, and maybe, who knows? We saw in our mock draft Boston move up, but a number of teams could be looking to move up. Maybe Rochester is looking to move up. Maybe Charlotte is looking to move up. You never know who's going to actually be looking to jump up there. But I certainly think Florida and Boston have the most work to do, and they have the picks to go out there and do it and do this kind of rebuild.
Well, to throw it to you, Tom. Or actually, I'm sorry, throw it to you, Joe. This draft that we did had a lot of players who fell a long way, and the NIL restrictions are going to be huge for a lot of these players. Exactly how big do you think it's going to be for the NIL to be a factor in this draft, and exactly how do you think it's going to impact a lot of these teams drafting? Because obviously a guy like Wesley Bird, number 3 to Charlotte, is going to depend on whether or not he can play, because Wade LaParte has never really drafted a player that can last this long. How do you think this draft is going to shape up? And do you think Lyle Thompson is going to go 1? Do you think he's going to be drafted? Like, exactly, I know I just asked you 60,000 questions, but exactly how do you think this draft is going to go? Because I think this is really interesting, exactly how a draft that's this deep in attack can possibly go, considering a lot of the players are aligned with NIL.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Like, Westberg and all these guys, Jesse King, Randy Stutz, I would say all those guys that are going to play box besides Lyle Thompson are going to see a little hit to their draft stock. I think guys who aren't going to play box, like Connor Bucek and Ryan Tucker and John Glessner, are probably going to get drafted higher than they would if the two leagues didn't have an overlap in their season, but the reality of the situation is that they do. And it's just really tough to pick a guy who's going to miss your first four to six games every year for his entire career with your first round pick. You look at a lot of the studs around the league, like Joe Walters, John Grant Jr., Kevin Crowley, those guys that, I mean, they play NLL, and they've been involved in trades, I think all of them in the last 18 months, pretty big trades. They've shown that they're worth a lot to teams. Teams are giving up first-round picks for them, but it's just different once you have guys like that on your team. So it's tough to say what teams are going to pick these guys and what teams are going to avoid them, because, like you said, Charlotte and even New York avoids NLL guys at all costs, whereas Denver and Rochester have, I think, 8 and 7 guys respectively. And what do? Do they take on another one? What's the difference between 8 and 9? Or do they avoid them because they just realize they're going to get guys who can play in the spring? So it's going to be interesting to see which teams sort of take a chance on these guys and suck it up for those first couple months of the season, because we've seen teams take opposite approaches, and now I'm wondering if any teams are going to sort of shift their philosophy to go after one of these future stars.
Tom, I don't know any two people more dedicated to outdoor lacrosse and collegiate lacrosse than you and I. You see guys in our mock draft go super late, like Kevin Rice, 2, Charlotte 16. Kind of preposterous. Like, if that actually happens, I'll be doing cartwheels up and down the street, but that's neither here nor there. How do you think this draft is actually going to play itself out? Because a lot of these players are not going to go where we pick them, because we've made a bunch of trades, we've done a lot of swapping that, you know, you don't really understand that people could possibly do. How do you think this draft is going to shape itself out this weekend, and who do you think is going to be the big winner coming out of it, based off the fact they can make the trades and make the impact picks that are needed to make their franchise move forward heading into the next year?
We're going to see a couple trades. I mean, we're going to see some interesting movement. There's already lots and lots of rumors going around about possible destinations for certain players. That first pick is, I think, obviously Lyle Thompson. If Florida can move it, great. If not, I think they have to bring him in. The key is talking him into coming down there to play. If they can pick up, you know, his brother or his cousin or you know, his older brother or a combination of that group, then I think they can talk him into playing. But I think if it's just him, that's going to be a difficult decision. A lot of these guys, I mean, the top-end talent in this draft is NLL committed. And, you know, you can't really blame these guys. But there's a lot of guys that I think will fall in this draft. You know, Wesley Berg, Jesse King, Randy Stotts, because of that situation. I think those guys, we have them all going in the first round. I think they fall out of the first round because of that, because, you know, you want these guys to play, you know, 12, 14 games a year. You don't want somebody who's going to play seven. That's a tough situation to be in, to draft a guy who's going to play half of a season. And you can't really put your franchise face. That's why Boston trading up and drafting Thompson is very questionable. I like it. I think it would be great, but how do you make the face of your franchise a guy who's only eligible for seven or eight games per season? There's question marks there. There's question marks with a lot of these guys. I agree with Tim. Taking anybody out of Army is going to be difficult because you don't know what the situation is. Lots changes throughout the season. Every year we see somebody get hurt who was drafted and isn't available to play until the following year. So it's interesting, but there's so many different directions this draft could go. There's so many different directions and things that could happen. It's going to be fun. It's going to be interesting. And, you know, I love this stuff. I love drafts. I love mock drafts. You know, I think I read about 600 NFL ones a year, and it's just a lot of fun to do. And you know, taking this role on and playing GM makes it even more fun, because I think we all drafted what we think would be best for our team, but man, it would be funner to do this. It would be so much more fun to do this if NLL commitments weren't part of the deal.
Yeah, I think one interesting thing is the Thompsons, because I think that we've all anointed them as like the first family of lacrosse at this point in time, or at least the future. And, Joe, I kind of want to kick it back off to you. Exactly what do you think is going to happen with the Thompsons, and what do you think is going to happen with the Thompson trade scenario?
Yeah, so earlier I talked a little bit about how Rochester is just absolutely loaded at attack and midfield, and I'm not really sure they could take on, another player, never mind a guy who's going to touch the ball as much as Lyle Thompson. I think that one possible trade scenario, which might make a little bit of sense, is Miles Thompson actually going down to Florida. I know Coach Zidane loves him as a finisher and as sort of the heir to Kevin Lavelle, but he also does need guys who can come in right now and play right away. So if Florida offers up maybe a pick and a guy like Kevin Cunningham, who doesn't have any box commitments and will be playing right away, for Miles Thompson, then I think that it'd be a nice fit in Florida. You can run Lyle Thompson sort of initiating from behind, or Casey Powell. Both of them can sort of fill that role or run out of the box. You got your right-handed finisher in Miles and your left-handed finisher in Kieran McArdle. And, I mean, all of this is assuming that Curtis Dixon isn't going to play. That's still a pretty good offense. So if there's any way that the Thompsons get reunited in Florida, I think it would be a much better fit for them than getting reunited in Rochester, where they're sort of going to be sort of breaking up something that fit something that worked a lot last year. I mean, that's just an offense that gels. I'm not sure how much you want to tamper with the guys on that roster.
I think the Thompsons are going to be the most interesting portion of this entire draft, because if – I don't want to say they won't go to a certain situation, but if they don't – if they can negotiate their way out of Florida, if they don't want to be there and want to go to the Northeast, that shifts the entire draft. And so I think the Thompsons are kind of one of these guys, like Eli Manning back in the day and a couple other people who negotiated their way out of a couple of number one overall picks to – go to the place they want. And I think that's going to be the interesting thing about this draft. But I do think that this draft is super attack-heavy, which is something that this league could possibly see moving forward being a huge boom for them, because a lot of these players are dynamic offensive talent, and they are a lot of NLL people. And this entire draft could just be really interesting. We all did our mock drafts, and today we saw people like Kevin Rice go to 16, and we saw other people go super early that we didn't really think would go that way. And that could be the way this weekend goes. And so for us at Lax Dirt, I think it's going to be really interesting moving forward exactly how this entire MLL draft moves forward. And so for the next couple of days, make sure you stay tuned to laxdirt.com, because we're going to initiate our entire draft next couple days with letter grades from each one of us on every pick. And it should be kind of interesting to see exactly what people think once the picks have actually been registered in your mind. And I really think that it's going to be interesting to see exactly what this league is going to do going forward, because we all thought that the expansion would have already happened, and that might be the big announcement coming forward. But either way, stay tuned to LaxDirt.com. Stay tuned to the Pro Lacrosse Face-Off coming at you next Wednesday, 8 p.m., as always, with myself, James Boger, Joe Keegan, Tom Bovee, and hopefully we'll bring back Tim Thomas as often as he's available. He's doing a lot of other things off-scene that are hopefully truly productive for him, and we're all super proud of him for what he's doing. And so for all of us at LaxDirt.com, we're all going to wish you guys a good week, happy draft, and hopefully you guys tune in the next couple of days for our draft coverage. Joe Keegan is going to be covering the draft live from LaxDirt.com on the at LaxDirt site. And from here on out, we are all just going to try to make sure that the draft goes through as good as possible, and we hope everyone else has a great rest of your evening. So for all of us, for Joe, for Tim, for Tom, hopefully everyone has a great evening, great week, and we're looking forward to the weekend. Thanks.